don't monkey with them city guys. You'll find them slick as lard. Just go and get a half a pint and stay in the wagon yard. Thank you. We get a lot of requests for Mockingbird, and we'd like to do it for you here. I'm dreaming now of Hallie, sweet Hallie, sweet Hallie. I'm dreaming now of Hallie and a mockingbird singing all day. She's sleeping in the valley, the valley, the valley. She's sleeping in the valley and the mockingbird singing over her grave. Now listen to the mockingbird, listen to the mockingbird singing all day. Now listen to the mockingbird, listen to the mockingbird singing over her grave. Now listen to the mockingbird, listen to the mockingbird singing over her grave. Now listen to the mockingbird, listen to the mockingbird singing over her grave. Thank you, you've been a swell audience. Happy to be here.
Gordon and Phil Tanner. The Tanners will be back, as will W. Guy Bruce, Jimmy Lee Harris, and Neil Patman to play some music from Georgia, community-type music, social-type music, when the Dog Trot House is inaugurated at the party at 3 o'clock this afternoon. So we hope to see you back then. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and welcome to our last session of the festival. in the food preservation and community activities section. We are going to talk with two experts today on home canning. If you've all been by the tent across the way, you've noticed the good smells coming from that tent. We think it's the best smelling tent in the whole festival grounds. And so these ladies today are going to tell you how they prepare some of the foods that they've been working on for the past week. To my immediate right is Minnie Pearl Brown from Tifton, Georgia. She's been over preparing many canned foods, and you perhaps have had a chance to talk to her. To my far right is Peggy Miller from Sylvester. Is that right?
North County.
Sylvester, Georgia. And she, too, has been organizing and preparing many of the foods that you've, I'm sure, enjoyed looking at today. Both of these women are very well recognized in their community for their home canning. They do many things very well. But one thing that the community knows they do well is can food. They can a lot of it and many different varieties, some of which those of us who live in this area or other parts of the country perhaps have never experienced before. And so later on we're going to talk about some of those foods that we might consider a little unusual, like canned peanuts or mayha jelly or the hot pepper jellies. Canning, home canning, it seems to me, is a craft that really has not received the attention that it deserves. And I think later on in our discussion we'll talk about some of the very fine points of canning. Some of the reasons that I think canning is popular and has been of interest to our festival crowd is because, obviously, it's very economical. It saves money to raise your own produce and then can it yourself at home. In addition to that, home canned foods reflect regional tastes. You can prepare foods that your family enjoys that you may not be able to buy in the supermarket. And for that reason, we also think it's important. In addition, making canned foods takes technical skill and aesthetic judgment. And I think that's something that has not been fully recognized. It pleases me to see at the Renwick Gallery's exhibit of Oregon folk art, canned foods displayed as a folk art object. Because I think when you look at the fruits nicely arranged in the jars and you see the clear sauce over some of the foods, I think they do in fact look beautiful. And it's a reassuring feeling to see the 100 or 200 or 300 jars of food in the fall that you have ready for the long winter months. So after that little introduction, why don't you ladies tell me why you devote so much time to home canning? Ms. Miller?
Well, first of all, it's economical, as she told you. And then, two, it's a lot of fun to prepare it. And most of all, our families enjoy it. And especially as you have company to come in, you can just open a jar and put it on the table. You can have four varieties of your vegetables. And then, two, that it has so many good tastes that you cannot get if you go to a grocery store and open a can. The can has a flat taste, but when you open a good jar, you know that it is a real good taste to it.
How about you, Ms. Brown? Why do you think you do so much canning?
I just enjoy it. 49 years ago on Sunday, my mother-in-law showed me how to make pear preserve and pear radish. And I started watching her from that, and I got interested. She run the bakery, too, and I just got interested and watched her for about 2 years. She didn't know I had never cooked nothing, and I wouldn't tell her. I just watched them and washed the dishes. I'd wash the dishes. I'm going to wash the dishes. I'd get into her, and I'd get the dishes washed. And then, but she didn't know I was learning how to do all the same time. And so after I learned how, about 2 years later, I started preserving and canning myself. And then after my family began to grow, got to the place I was having four children in 2 years, I had to go to work trying to feed them. And because I couldn't support all that food buying out of the store. And I just can because I just know I'll have something that my children can come home for. Having 66 grandchildren and 18 great-grandchildren and eight and two greats, it takes something to feed them, and we're expecting a family reunion Christmas Eve, and I know that's going to be a day that I'll enjoy as well as I have enjoyed myself in Washington, D.C. when I left home, I told him goodbye, Tifton. Hello, D.C. Here come a fifth grade woman looking to see thee. And so I says, I got you. I've never met a person that looked like he was angry or felt bad. I think I felt bad than anybody yesterday because I was down and out. I hadn't been used to standing on my feet that long. But I thank God for every moment I have been in Washington. And I enjoy candy, making preserves, fig preserves, pear preserves, plum jelly, apple jelly, peach jelly, blackberry jelly, blackberry jam. I'm making some jam down there now. As soon as I go back, I'll finish it. But when you want to do a thing and get your mind set on your goal, God will let you do it. He said, anything you want to do, he said, put me first, and he will let you do the work.
That's good, very good. Ms. Miller, when did you start canning?
Well, I started about 9 years old, and Mother took us in the kitchen and showed us how to prepare it, how to wash it, and different foods have different ways of being prepared.
That's right.
Your string beans, you wash them and you snap them, and then you put them in the jars and you have to process them. In them days, we had to put them in cold water and put them on a big boiler on the stove or out in the yard in the wash pots, and you put a lid over it. They made a special lid out of tin for that, and then you had to stay there, and they'd make us watch the time they take it out. And of course, it was longer than we do now. We didn't know that, and the beans was already cooked to death when you got them out. So you learn with time. And then we even canned meat, too, in them days. Out in the wash pot, if there was something going on in the wood stove. And then we had different seasons at different times. Now, the modern time, a bunch of us ladies, young ladies over 60, I'm 39, we get around, and the night before, we gather the food. If okra and peas and tomatoes are in season, we can them. The next day, they all come with their boilers and a bunch of goodies. And we all gather around and we can these. They have the peas snapped and the corn, cut off the cobs, and their tomatoes washed. And then we have big boilers there on our stove. And one washes, one puts it in the boiler, and then watches that cooking, and then we're preparing the jars, and the other ladies are preparing the jars, and we just rotate. It's an assembly line. I wish you all could see us. We sing, and, oh, we just do a lot of things and learn a lot of gossip and everything. We never have a newspaper because there's no need in reading that because we know all the news. And then these jars we prepare. We take a lot of these to the fair, and we do win prizes.
Sure enough. I won first prize on Conrad this last year.
Ah, that's good.
And hoping I'll be able to win it this time. Down at Tifton, we're going to have a fair there on the 17th, I think. And at the daycare center where I work, we're making different things out of poto. That dough, what you pull. We're making elephants. Dogs, frogs, and little hogs, horses, all of them out of that were proto. And we get making drawing turkeys and pictures, dolls, and all that. We're going to have a display from the little 3, 4, and 5-year-old children. And it's going to be a beautiful booth. We won second prize last year, and I won first prize on corn radish.
Ah, that's why we had you make it up here, didn't we?
And then we have the cooperative. They have the canning plants, and we can take our can vegetables that we haven't canned, and we can take them down there, and there's a bunch of us ladies down there, and men too. We take the men along to do some of the lifting, and they do the packing in the cans, and then after that, they give us a number, and they stamp the number on these cans, and then after we get through with that, we just forget about them, and then we go back the next day, and we have our canned products already ready to take home, and that saves us a lot of time.
Why do you think you like to can in groups? Why do the bunch of you ladies get together to do your canning? Is it just fun, or does it cut down on the heat or the work? Or
it'll cut down on the work. You help me and I help you, and it won't go so hard. Now, you see, that's taken now. I go down there and get my corn, okra, peas, and tomatoes, and ground beef. All that's got to go into my soup, when I'm canning soup. Well, now, somebody got to help to prepare all of that to get it ready. After we get it ready, we have those Griego iron steel pots. We put it in there and we cook it. And after we cook it, then we've got cans running on a rack, on a belt. We fill them up and slip them out of water on that belt and carry on down there. They got a man way down yonder about where we working at, capping them. And then it's just more fun to do it, have some help.
And just have some help. That's at the canning cooperative, at the canning plant.
Yeah.
Do foods taste different, the ones you have done at the canning plant, taste different from the ones you do at home?
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. How are they different?
Well, in the canning plant, they have tender to have a little flat taste, but the ones you have at home, I don't know what the reason is, but it has more of a
fresh taste.
Mm-hmm. And do both of them taste better than what you buy in the store?
Oh yes.
Oh, yeah.
I was just asking.
Yeah.
You got a can of tomato soup out the store, you got juice and water. You get some, and you get some that we fix. You got some seasoned food.
Yes.
And we know how. We're trained. We graduated with it. We didn't go to school for it. God just give us knowledge to have that knowledge to do it. And that's why I can cook a sour cream pound cake and just dip my hand in the sack and throw it in there, bust my eggs and throw them in there, and make it all up at once and throw it in the stove. 45 minutes, we got good cake.
Let's talk about some of the products now that you all been making that people were sort of interested in. First of all, you have a recipe book, Ms. Miller. Did you want to show that to people or just talk
yes,
about?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. And they can get this at their cooperative extension. Or you can write up here to the agriculture,
right.
Is it, mm-hmm. department. And this book is a handy book. You know our Bible. We love our Bible. Well, a good cook stands by one of these.
That's right.
And it has everything in there. We'll make mistakes, and then you go back and look in this book, and it'll tell you why you made your mistake. And I really live by one of these. Every one of us do.
That's the one you use. It's called So Easy to Can.
That's right. And they have different books that come out on peaches and apples, blackberries, any kind of berry that you want to. You ask your county extension office, and they will have it. If they don't, you'll have it in 2 days.
Good. And then one thing about this book she got here, she say how you love your Bible. You have to love every book because the book is wrote from the Bible. Have you ever given that a thought? It's 26 letters in the alphabet, ain't it? That's what they always told me. I didn't go to fifth grade, but I remember what I read. All right, then, after the 26 lessons I bet it took all of them to make the Bible and it took all of them to make the book.
Good. Okay. Now, what are some of the recipes you have there? Why don't you tell us a little bit about the hot pepper jelly? That's one that people have been interested in. Is that a real jelly for our muffins in the morning?
That's right, for your muffins in the morning or your parties. Mm-hmm. If you want a real gadabout party, a real interesting eye catcher, just get these little crackers and put a little cottage cheese and hot pepper jelly on there, and boy, you'll have somebody coming asking you questions. And that's a southern dish.
How do you make it, the hot pepper jelly?
The hot pepper jelly, you have your bell peppers, and then you get banana peppers. That's a yellow pepper. If you haven't got your banana pepper, then use an extra bell pepper or two. And then you get your hot peppers, jalapeno, I guess you pronounce it, but a good hot pepper. Don't use more than 3 or 4. And take out the seeds. Now, right. Save them seeds for your white pepper. You can dry that and then crush them, and you have your white pepper to pepper, because that's very expensive. Mm-hmm. And this is and then you use your vinegar in that and cook it. You grind your peppers up, mm-hmm. and then you just boil all that, and then you pour it in your jars. Mm-hmm. Oh, you have to use your pectum in that because there's not enough acid in your peppers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then just seal it, and that's good on winter nights, or Anytime. It's good with fish, pork, beef.
So you also use it as a relish? You use
yes.
it as a relish as well as a jelly.
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. right.
Okay.
All right, there. I've got a question. Two of them I want to put out there for y'all. High school educators out there. All fifth grade men and Pearl Brown. Give me $1.15 and don't give me now nickel. Right quick now. I want $1.15 in round figure numbers, and don't give me now a nickel.
Nobody can figure it out? Nobody can figure it out.
All right, I'm going to tell you now. You give me 3/4 and 4 dimes, and that's $1.15 all over the world. All right, now give me 50 pieces of the money and make $1 out of it. All right, then, listen now. 40 pennies, 8 nickels, and 2 dimes, and 50 cents. It's $1. 40 pennies, 8 nickels, and 2 dimes is $1.
See, she has a lot of knowledge.
All right, then, let's spell a little bit. Somebody spell me compressed liability. I got whoopings about this in school. Compressed liability. Nobody?
Nobody. You got them baffled.
Then.
You got them baffled.
C-O-M, come, P-R-E-S-S-I-B-E-L-I-T-Y. You hear me? I got a good whooping about that, and I won't never forget it.
Never forget that one. Okay, Ms. Brown, tell us a little bit about how you make your peanuts. Now, people have really been asking about those boiled peanuts over there, canned boiled peanuts.
Well, that's you'll get you some water and put your peanuts on the start. Now, this is the way I do mine at home, but I never can none in jars like she do yonder. But I just go, I got a wash pot, and I just go share me about a peck, get me 2 cups of table salt and about 3 gallons of water and pour them in there, and there'll be a fired oak wood. And let them boil about an hour, and they're done.
You have to wash them, though,
but
about
you have to
five or six times.
Yeah, you wash them and get the sand off of them because the goobers are gold in the ground.
then everyone was asking me, what do you do with those peanuts after you boiled them?
Well, we just bag them and jump them in the freezer. So we sitting around watching TV, cold nights, too cold to do anything. We just get them out of the bag, and they shell and tell lies, tell jokes, and have fun.
And eat those peanuts.
Eat peanuts,
but you take them out of the shells. People are asking me, you take them out of the shell.
Yeah, you have to take them out of the shell. But I had a brother, he was so greedy and loved them so well, he just eat her and all.
All right, another favorite one people have been asking about is the mayhaw jelly. Now, what are those mayhaws, and how did you make that mayhaw jelly?
Well, that's in southern Georgia and Alabama, southern part, and Mississippi, the southern part, where they have the lime, and it's in the swamp. They call swamp apples. That was the original part. And then they're only grown in May, so it's mayhaw, M-A-Y-H-A-W. And it means a sweet water. The Indians used to call that. And you have to, they grow in trees about 6 feet high, thorny. You can't climb them. So you have to get down there and shake them. And the way we do, there's 4 of us that go out there, or 5. And each one has a sheet. And we put it around the tree and we shake that tree and the hulls fall in that sheet. Uh-huh. Or else if you didn't, you have to have a sifter and go out there and just sift them out of the water. And then you take them home and wash them and then put them in the water, a boiler. Well, I put about 1/2 gallon to 2 gallons of water and boil it. And then don't throw them berries away. You strain that juice and you can cook them again. Put more water on there and cook them again. Hmm. And don't throw the berries away again. You can cook them a third time.
Right.
Now the color will be from a dark pink, about a red, yes, and then it'll come a little lighter, about a darker pink, and then the last water, it'll be a light pink.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But the taste does not change. It's an apple taste, and them apples are real sour if you've eaten one. I don't know if anybody's eaten a persimmon. You know how that tastes. It puckers up. Mm. Well, that's how one of them little apples do. When you eat one of the children ate one. Can I taste it? And I said, no. And he took one, and he said, oh, no wonder you didn't want me to taste it. And then you add your sugar, 1 cup of sugar, to 1 cup of the juice. And then you boil that and boil it for about 30 minutes. And then you put your sure gel in there. You don't have to, but we have been doing it up here.
Well, why we do it?
I don't know why.
I know why I do it. I can make good jelly, but not putting sure gel in it. But it takes twice as long.
That's right.
If you use the sure gel, after it comes to a boil for 20 minutes, then you go ahead and use your sure gel. 15 minutes, you got you some jelly. 45 minutes the most, I cook my jellies.
Mm-hmm.
Using sure gel.
So a little faster that
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. How do you make that prize-winning corn relish that you were telling us about, Miss Brown?
I win it. Well, when you make the corn relish, the recipe called for 18 years of corn. But here in late years, you don't make four in big, long years, 12 inches long. But now, since it'll be a short year and a small year, I use it 20 years of corn. All right, that's going to make 8 to 10 pints. All right, you use 6 big onions, 12 green peppers. But in the summertime, when the corn is coming off in July, I have green tomatoes. And I go out there and get those little hard green tomatoes. I use 20 green tomatoes, 12 big pods of bell pepper, 6 bananas, and 3 hearts. That's called how long it is. Sometimes I use 5 hearts if it's not long enough. And then I combine all them ingredients together. And then I use 2 cups mustard, 2 tablespoonfuls of powdered tuna, and 5 cups of sugar and 1/2 gallon of vinegar. Stir all those ingredients together, and you get that corn relish like I got that on some plate.
And it is good.
It's all real good.
You want a good sandwich and got to go to work, get you a hamburger. Put some mustard on each side of your bread, and then slap it on there and go on and lay it up in the sun or lay it on a warm it about 11 o'clock and eat it. And you eat that, you'll call for another one.
Do any of you out there have a question you'd like to ask, a special recipe you'd like them to explain, or anything you'd like to ask them about? Anybody? No? Well, I thank you both ladies for being with us this afternoon and in the whole festival. And I guess, Ms. Brown, you want to say something, okay?
All right, yeah, listen, look out, Tifton. The day is the last day and Mama coming home. Goodbye, Washington. Mama have had a good bowl and ain't through yet because I'm got to dance on head. Come on down to the Cassandra tonight on 11th Street, I think it is. We going to have a ball, because one more night in town, Mama got to go home.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Friends, my name is Ralph Rensler, and 14 years ago this year, we started a folklife festival here, which has meant a lot to a great many people. To wit, so many of you have been here this weekend. And in working on that festival, there have been just a small handful of people who've worked with us for most of those years. And one of those people was working with us this year and was killed in an automobile accident. She was not only a close friend and worker, but an example to many of us of a kind of spirit and power that we came to know and love well and deeply. And we'd like to dedicate this closing concert here on the festival grounds to Abby Watkins Bernan, who worked with this festival from 1971 until this summer during festival times. The people on the stage, except for a handful of friends from Georgia, are people who worked along with her in the Office of Folklife Programs at the Smithsonian. And we're all going to ask you to join us in singing 2 hymns. And in a moment of silence between them on this first part of the program. And then following that, we'll have musicians from each of the component programs of this festival performing for you for about 30 to 40 minutes. We're going to start with Phil Tanner and Dabney Crosby, Gordon Tanner and Eugene Lane leading us in a song which we'd like you to sing with us, Will the Circle Be Unbroken?
Thank you. I was standing by my window on one cold and cloudy day when I saw the hearse come rolling far to carry my mother away.
Will the circle be unbroken by and by or by and by? There's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
Undertaker, 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 please drive slow for that lady that you held in. Oh, I hate to see her go. Oh,
will that circle be unbroken?
One by one, our friends are taken. One by one, they go away. But we know we'll be together up in heaven some sweet day.
Will the circle be unbroken?
Abby Watkins, during the time she was working with us, came to Washington as a young woman out of college, really as a young girl out of college. She was fearful about her ability to measure up to her very own high standards. And she was a timorous young girl. And with the help of strong family and strong friends, she developed into a powerful grown woman. And those of us who grew with her and came to see her grow knew that the people who were behind her at home, her brothers and her aunt, Mary Gardner Jones, made it possible for Abby to make that transition. It was a hard one for her. And her aunt is with us here today, and we're going to give this tribute to Abby Watkins Brennan, to Mary Gardner Jones, and to Abby's husband, Doug Brennan, who can't be with us, he's in Europe. And it reads, a tribute to Abby Watkins Brennan, our colleague whose standard of excellence inspired each of us. Folklife Festival staff, Smithsonian Institution, October 13th, 1980. I want it. I'm going to ask all of you if you'd join us in observing all over the festival grounds a moment of silence, while each of us can have an opportunity to reflect on what Abby meant to us, those of us who knew her, and to reflect on what this kind of coming together of people means.
Are we going to line a hymn, Amazing Grace? Are we going to line as we sing? Amazing Grace, how sweet it sound that save a wretch like me. Amazing Grace, how sweet it sound that save a was lost, but now I found, was blind, but now I see. I was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. Through many dangers, toil and snares, I have already come. Through many dangers, toil and snares, I have already come. For grace that brought me safe this far, and grace will carry me home. Was grace that brought years, bright shining as the sun. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we more or less dead to sing God's praise than when we first begun. We more or less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun. Amazing grace, how sweet the
before we move into the rest of the music, I'd like to read something about the festival, which was spoken at the second festival at the end of a very trying time. And I want to read it because I think it's a particularly beautiful evocation of the spirit of the kinds of people that you have on the stage singing today that come together here, grassroots people from all over the nation, who are really the power of this country. And I think Alan Lomax, in his closing remarks to the 68 Festival, expressed the spirit of that festival, which meant so much to Abby as well as it means so much to all of us here. It's the kind of spirit that Abby evoked in the participant's handbook, which she designed for this festival, laid it out, chose the photographs. And it's not surprising that with that handbook in hand, 200 people came here and made happen on these grounds this week one of the most loving and wonderful together experiences that those of us who've worked on this festival together with them have ever had. I think you'll understand when you hear Alan's words. You have to understand that these words were spoken right after the closing of Resurrection City, that struggle with poor people from all over the country traveling on foot with mule teams, traveling in buses for days, black and white and red coming together to express their concern for people who are struggling to survive in a country full of plenty. And right after the closing of that Resurrection City, which had run for 6 weeks, the festival opened, and it was the first coming together since the death of Martin Luther King where people felt relaxed and could breathe again. And summing up that experience, Alan Lomax said, "This is the festival of the common man, the festival of the democratic art. This is the art that American people have made out of their experience. All of the people, black and white and brown and red, with all the languages and all the cultures of the world coming here to make a new country with a new hope. In some ways, it seems sometimes that we are about to lose this hope and this dream. And then, in affairs like this, we realize our strength. We realize how beautiful we are. Black is beautiful, and Appalachia is beautiful, and even tired old Washington sometimes is beautiful when the American people gather to sing and fall in love with each other again." I want to thank you for coming and sharing this with us this afternoon. And right now, we'll get into the joyous part of this program, because it was that joy that brought us here, and it was that joy that made our friendship with Abby such a deep and pleasurable and positive one. So let's get on with the joyous part of the festival and dedicate every song on this stage and all of the good thoughts in our hearts and minds to Abby's memory. Thank you.